for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get a rebound. Kicks it out. Katie Sykes for three. No,
from local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
And welcome into this edition of the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Happy Thursday, birds. I always start that way. Why should I miss it today? I'm alone here, along with, I should say, David Moses and Dane Dravis. I wish I was alone. I don't like either of you two.
Oh, I definitely don't like you guys this week.
Oh, no, I don't like you either.
No, we got some big football picks coming up later in the show, and that'll explain why we're all against each other in this one. But first and foremost, we do have one common denominator today. We are all Fell Hall World Series champs, so that's pretty cool.
Okay, I love you again.
Yeah, I love you guys too. That was a big win.
You know, I don't know if Dane loved us during the game. We were having some pretty big errors during that game.
Oh,
we
God.
Won literally on the last play. It was a walk-off, but you know, it's all that matters is we got the trophy sitting right in front of us.
Yeah, I got the trophy here sitting next to me, in the studio sitting next to us, and it was a good game. I mean, for context, we talked about it a little bit last week, but we play TV10 every year in softball, and it just so happened this year we were out there at the field as always, and for the fourth time in a row, but sixth year in a row because there was two cancellations, we are the champs. So that is pretty cool that we were able to say that, and later in the show we'll be joined by Tim Zalovac, who went like 5 2/3 innings and was our star pitcher too.
Like so. The second year in a row, I think he's MVP or something like that.
See, yeah, and with me, like I added a little bit of diva from every sport. I cut up my t-shirt like Chris Sale in baseball. I acted like Phil Kessel and pouted when I wasn't getting my way. And then I was like Antonio Brown running around like a madman.
But you know, I will say this, and then we'll get to the actual sports here. You did make a very good dive to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it might have been in the middle, like top of the fifth or bottom of the fifth or something like that. You made one of the plays of the game that really helped us turn that, you know, thing around.
Oh, thanks, David. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you're saying that to butter me up because you guys had
no.
You guys had two errors from second base while I was playing first.
I was terrible playing in the game, but it was because, honest to God, and this sounds like an excuse, but it was because I was so focused on coaching. Because I went into coaching a rec softball game than I thought. I was monitoring that lineup the whole time. They had me like keeping score on a notebook.
You had to give like two middle of the game speeches.
Yeah, I had to give some speeches. I had Gavin and Max do it too at one point, so I could just take a breather, just chatting with the umpire a little bit, and just in general it kind of all came together. And then a nice walk off at the end, Michael Gambino had the hit on that one, and I think Ange scored on the play.
Ange did score, former Wabanzi Valley Warrior. But I also want to say too, it was so intense. Just for some context, I literally walked up to Mikey, and I think the score, we were either up one or down one at the time, and they had man on second and third with two outs. Or maybe it was one out, because I wanted the four set too, and I walked up to Mikey and I was like, intentional walk. Like,
in
a recreational softball game.
I actually did, but I wasn't gonna wave him like you would in like MLB. I wasn't gonna like, you know, motion to the umpire and just wave. No, I was gonna say, I was gonna tell Tim, like, make this a tough at bat, but give him four balls. But no, we were like, no, it's a rec softball game.
I signaled to Tim, who was the pitcher at the time. I literally put my right hand on my chest and I put my left hand out to signal for
throw it outside. Like, throw it outside. Yeah,
the intentional walk signal before they just said before the new rule in the MLB where you can just say it to the umpire. And Timmy Z, like, who is a former baseball player, I don't think realized that I was calling for an intentional.
Who calls
walk.
For an intentional walk in a rec softball game? That was our problem.
I honestly hate losing.
Well, ended up being okay, but you know, that could be all we can recap all we want. We have Redbird sports to recap. So first and foremost, I want to talk a little bit about football. They played versus Eastern Illinois, excuse me, on Saturday. Blake Bogart, a friend of the pod, and David were on the call, and I didn't get to watch much of it because I was on the road, but I think it was a really solid game, a nice win that really kind of was, I think that was the win we expected them to have against Valpo, but instead 35-7 against Eastern, not a tough team in Eastern, but I think that was the win that we finally were like, okay, this Redbirds team at least can do well against FCS opponents.
Yeah, it just seemed like that night that the Redbirds, everything was going into their favor. Defense was dominant, 3 interceptions, 2 fumble recoveries, 4 sacks, and 2 defensive touchdowns. Zach Ennickstead, you know, he continues to improve. I know he had the 2 interceptions. One was off of a pressure. He, you know, he forced the ball in there, tried to get it to his receiver. You know, the cornerback just made a good read on it. And then the last one was a late-game situation. He should have been out the game. But this right here is one of the things that I talked about during the broadcast. Is Ennickstead, he's making some really good plays. He's doing some really good things on this field. He's leading this offense, and they're starting to become a little bit more consistent. I talked about it a few weeks ago, how inconsistent and hard it has been for the Redbird offense to be able to put up points in these games. Last year, I think they averaged just around 14 points per game, and it's just that's underwhelming. You're not going to win a lot of games like that. Ennickstead has really came in here, took control of this offense, and it's starting to show off right here.
Now, let me ask you this, because I saw Wankers Wright only had 2 carries for, what was that, 9 yards. Did he get hurt during the game?
So it looked like in the first quarter he had a shoulder injury, and he just never came back from it. And that's another thing we were talking about for this Redbird offense, is they have been depleted in the running back room with Cole Mueller going out the first game of the season, and then Wankers Wright going out this game. And it sucks, because it came off of such a great game he had against Valpo, where he had over 100-yard game. We kind of felt like he was going to string together some things and we would see a potential star in him. We haven't really got an update on what's going on with that injury. Hopefully he's able to come back as soon as possible, because after he left the game, you know, the run game was kind of lifeless. And that's something that is going to, you know, show up on the scouting reports, you know, as we get later into the season.
Ennickstead in the game was 19 for 33, 212 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks. Longest was 31 yards and was sacked once, compared to Jonah O'Brien in Eastern, 15 for 21, so better percentage, but only 100 yards, 1 tutty, and 3 picks. Longest was also coincidentally 31, but he suffered 2 sacks. So just a good job by the Redbird defense to limit him there.
Also, before we, you know, switch the topic, Ennickstead won the MVC Player of the Week this week. Along with Vandenberg, I'm forgetting
his first
name.
Zeke Vandenberg. Yeah,
Zeke Vandenberg, who had an amazing game, 8 tackles, 1 sack, 3 tackles for a loss, and he also had a pass breakup that led to an interception. The defense was just firing on all cylinders, and it really helped them, you know, win that game against EIU.
Not to look too forward into the future, but they faced a team in Southern Illinois who I believe just came off a pretty emotional win against Northwestern. Is that like a game of the year for us, do you think? Like, do you think it's going to really set the tone for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I mean, that Southern team is, like you said, Dane, they're not someone to mess with. I mean, they beat Northwestern. I mean, so did we a couple years ago. Northwestern hates playing Valley FCS opponents. But they beat Northwestern, and pretty decisively. They were up by 2 touchdowns at one point. And I think on October 1st, when we get the chance to host Southern, it'll be an indicator of how we can do stacked up against good FCS teams. I mean, obviously the Wisconsin game wasn't, at the end of the day, a good indicator of how good our team is, because we'll never see a team again with that much competition this season.
I'm just kind of lost, because Southern Illinois lost to Encarnate Word 64-29. They lost to SEMO 34-31. So they're rolling an 0-2. Go and beat a Big Ten school. It's
yeah.
I don't know if there's a game on the docket where I'm more up in air, like, about, like, I don't know what to expect. It could be a good game. We can kill them. We can get killed. I genuinely don't know. And I'm kind of loving the schedule, though, because if you look, you got Southern Illinois, who's 1-2, but it might be a deceptive record. They're going to follow that up with Northern Iowa, 0-3. So, and then South Dakota after that. Like, they don't have a team with a winning record on the docket until North Dakota State on October 29th. So it seems like this team could really build some wins here against teams that haven't been able to string together some wins. So I don't know. I feel like that game against Wisconsin might have gotten them on the right path and really gotten their toughest game out of the way.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I'm not to say that we didn't have some great takeaways from that Wisconsin game. I'm just saying, and yeah, whether or not Northwestern's any good or Southern had a fluke win at Northwestern, they are ultimately an FCS team that went to a Big Ten school and won. So that's something that, if you can beat Southern, it automatically adds a little bit of cred to your name and even some playoff implications eventually.
But, you know, you said it right there. ISU, you know, has a tendency this season of beating those teams that haven't really been able to string together some momentum. EIU came in the last game 0-2, and you saw what happened there. ISU really took advantage of it. And I just think going forward, they can only build off this momentum that they have right now. You know, despite the opponents, and, you know, we talked about SIU being the talented team that they are. I think ISU, they can do it. They can go out there and really surprise some teams and put up a good performance against them.
I'm actually kind of surprised with the lack of the Anakstad connection between the two brothers with Brock, because there was a couple nice throws in the Wisconsin game where I'm like, oh, these guys are going to be dynamite when they play some lower end competition. And it hasn't really been put together quite yet. I feel like Brock, I'm pretty sure, is a special teams guy, too. He's a punt returner, if I'm not mistaken.
He's a punt returner. Yeah.
So I would love to see more of a connection there, because there hasn't been, like, one guy step up in that receiver room as the guy, which you don't necessarily need that to win football games. But it's nice to know when the game's on the line, especially with some running backs, like with your running back room being absolutely depleted. Like, you want a guy that you can go to.
Speaking about beating the Big Ten, we take a quick pass over to volleyball, where we see that the Redbirds beat U of I on Saturday, number 25 U of I, in a matchup to start their it technically is the first game of their real season, even though it's still out of conference, obviously. But they did beat U of I 5 sets, awesome win. And then the next day they go and get swept by number 19 Marquette, which that one hurts, because yes, both U of I and Marquette are tournament teams, but Marquette is almost always in the same entry-level regional bracket in the first round of the AA tournament as ISU. And that last year, I think they played Dayton to 5 sets right before ISU faced Purdue. So Marquette's definitely a team, even if you don't have to face a Big Ten powerhouse in round one, you might have to face a Marquette-type team.
Well, you know, and one of the things that really sucks is, I think I heard Dane saying it before the show, is that Marquette kind of outmatched us a lot when we played them. The only benefit I see from that is we'll have something on film. So potentially if we face them later in the year, we can go back to the film and see the tendencies that we can exploit to try to, you know, best benefit us. But aside from that Marquette game, I have been very impressed with this Allie Matters team right here. They are resilient. I read a stat earlier. Let me see if I can find it really quick. Basically, the stat was that they had 2 come-from-behind whiffs that both came in the fifth set. That right there, I feel, is impressive. I think that that's a testament to how the coaches are coaching their team. You know, we stay in this. We're going to be a dogfight. No matter who the opponent is, we're coming in, and we're going to compete.
And we've been talking this whole year with this volleyball team, with the youth movement. When you play a ranked team like U of I, where they're 25th overall, you don't look to the rookies to carry and shoulder the load there. You look to your veterans, and Sarah Kushner, who led the way with 15 kills, 2 aces. She was all over the court. And you know what? Like, they got off to a really hot start. They won the first 2 sets. They fell in the 3rd set pretty badly. But if you look at the splits after the game, it's really close all throughout. So I feel like this Redbird team, like, I know they only rank the top 25 teams, but I think we're looking at, like, a top 30, top 35 team in the nation.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they're legit.
I think the key, and this has always been the key for a mid-major Valley school, and they call it Valley rallies, where you got to have longer, more drawn out plays. But when you get into a higher level in like the Big Ten, it's really more decisive. It's big blocks. It's huge at the net presence. And I think what the key was against U of I, it was 6 blocks apiece, and that was how the Redbirds won in 5. But in a 3-set sweep, the Redbirds had 2 blocks against Marquette and suffered 10. So that is where the issue is. And Nicole Lund against U of I had 4 blocks, none against Marquette, despite playing in all 3 sets. So when you limit Nicole Lund and the other best blockers on the Redbirds team, that is easily a way to get swept.
And this might be bad, but I'm kind of taking the Marquette loss with a grain of salt. I mean, I know they got swept, but you're coming off an emotional win against arguably your school's biggest rival that's in a Power 5 conference.
Yeah.
You're playing in Milwaukee, which is Marquette's basically home court. So it's one of those things where it's two steps forward, 1 step back is much better than 1 step forward, 2 steps back. And I would definitely consider it the latter.
And you both said it. Marquette is a tournament team. They're experienced. They have some really good players on their squad. And, you know, you're coming into a team where this is a first-year head coach, and, you know, I'm not taking anything away. She's done a very good job. But Marquette, you know, experience wins over that one. You said this wasn't a game that, you know, the younger underclassmen were going to win. And, you know, it wasn't. Unfortunately, we lost that one. Another thing that I've been impressed with is the Birds made their 4th consecutive NCAA tournament appearance in 2021. They also are one of only 21 teams in the nation to have made each of the last 4 NCAA tournaments as of, you know, late in the recent past. Being able to come into a position, knowing that background and molding the team the way that you want it, that's a very tough job. So I think we're going to have those hiccups down the road, especially versus teams like Marquette, where we're going to be challenged. We're going to be tested. It's important to take away from that as much as you can, because, like I said earlier, we're going to see those teams again, and we're going to have to come out and win those games if we want to see championships. you know, continue to come to ISU.
And I love on GoRedbirds.com that they have certain statistics that you don't always see on, for every sporting event. For let me find it right here. For the U of I game, there were, it says the attendance was 123. For the Marquette game, 609.
Yeah,
so it's a little bit different of an atmosphere if the numbers are accurate, which I don't find any reason why they wouldn't be, but I mean, you're going in, and that's a tough game. So I'm like I said, taking that with a grain of salt. They lost to a team who had one loss on their docket. Illinois State goes in. They've got a 7-4 record, and they're cooking with heat right now.
Well, and to wrap up the segment, you got to also notice that Marquette is a great team. Their only loss came to number 6 Wisconsin, coming off last year's national championship. Wisconsin is perennially a Final Four volleyball program, and to have Marquette play them and be the only team that has suffered a loss, that goes to show that Marquette is up there with the big dogs in volleyball. We're going to take a quick break, and when we get right back, we're going to have a special interview for you. We'll introduce that after the break.
Listening to The Red Zone, only on 1033 WZND.
Earlier today, Dane and I had the chance to talk to Dayton Hammies and Maya Bulger of Redbird Athletics. They deal with the NIL, Name, Image, and Likeness Department at ISU, which is a very new department, as that has only become legal for NCAA college athletes in 2021. And Dane, I think it was a really solid interview.
We probably could have talked to them for about three hours just learning new things, because it is a new frontier for college sports. And honestly, like, I like to think that I'm a sports buff, but I learned so much. Mm-hmm. And I'm really interested to see where this is going to go in the future.
We interviewed with them for about 20 minutes on Zoom earlier. We got it chopped up to about 13 or so minutes, best of. We're going to play that for you now here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
So first and foremost, tell us a little bit about each of you and why you think you're qualified for the positions you are in.
My role has a couple of different areas. So I oversee social media and I also have branding. I think I made it to this part of my role. Based on my experience previously at ISU, I've worked with a lot of different teams here, running a lot of different social media accounts. So that obviously plays in to the social media aspect of my job. But NIL is such a new thing, and social media has been a big piece of that. So being able to provide my perspective from all of my experience in social media here at ISU has been beneficial to the student athletes. And then also just, I think both of us are at an advantage just being younger. And being forward thinking. And
then also, my name is Maya Bulger. A lot of things and events with donors and fundraising and generating funds to go back to our university. So I've had a lot of experience with that. And then towards the end of that career, I worked with a sports agency as an agent for collegiate athletes. So I worked with athletes at Michigan State, Oregon State, just general influencers who were previous athletes. So I've had a lot of experience in this space. And then previous to leaving Illinois State, that's where I was working. And Kyle said, hey, we're entering the Name, Image, and Likeness space. We need someone to direct our program, right? So it was kind of a big switch for me dealing with student athletes, you know, level-wise. But Illinois State offers something that I wasn't getting with the sports agency, and that's having a home base. And that's dealing with athletes here at ISU, and that's my audience, right? So I get to develop relationships with these student athletes, go to their games, see them play, see them at practice, figure out who they are as a person. And I just wasn't able to get that experience in the sports agency field. And also having a previous relationship with everyone here at ISU definitely played a big role in that. And so being able to hone in on my fundraising skills and dealing with donors and marketing Illinois State as a university and athletic program, paired with my experience working with individual student athletes on developing their brand and marketing themselves and also pitching themselves to business, paired up really nicely.
All right, so we can't be too sure that our listeners know what the name, image, and likeness deals are. And explain it to us like we're second graders. What goes into NIL?
So name, image, and likeness, I always break it down as when you go and buy a jersey for an athlete and their name's on the back of it and they're getting money off of it, that's them capitalizing on their name. If you go and buy a training card or a poster or anything of that sort, that's that athlete capitalizing on their image. And then your likeness comes into play when you speak about your status, right? So as a student on campus, that's your status. If you're a part of an organization, that's your status. And these student athletes have a status as being a student athlete, and that's their likeness. So they're able to capitalize on those three things now that they previously weren't able to in the past. So student athletes now can go out and engage in public appearances, meet and greets. They can sell t-shirts with their name and number on it that they couldn't previously do. They can have an NFT. They can have a poster of themselves and be able to collect funds off that. And that's just something that they previously weren't allowed to do. And now, as of July 1st, 2021, they can do that now. So that's like the broken down version.
How does one go about securing an NIL deal?
Yep. So what we typically do here is that Dane and I meet with every team when they first get here, let them know the rules and what name, image, and likeness is. Because honestly, you'd be surprised. So many of these student athletes, it's so new. They don't really fully understand the full concept, just like a lot of people out here don't understand it as well. So we meet with them, talk about what name, image, and likeness is, let them know what they can and what they can't do, and then they'll typically start with Dane. And that's cleaning up their social media profiles and building up that audience, making them marketable to these businesses. Then they'll come to me, and then we'll do the business outreach and start pairing them up with those businesses to get those NIL opportunities.
How do you guys help them create more of a attractive social media?
Yeah, I mean, I sit down and talk to them about what they're interested in, what types of content that they posted in the past that their audiences have been engaged with. And then from that, we'll see, oh, well, they don't really like this type of content, but they really like this type of content. So we'll move forward with that. I'll help them brainstorm ideas. Something that I've really been emphasizing to all of our student athletes that I've been meeting with here lately is the importance of short form videos, so things like Instagram Reels and TikTok. Pretty much without posting on Instagram Reels, it's hard to gain following without doing that. So that's something I've been really stressing with them. And then in addition to that, like, I'll help them come up with the content ideas for those deals once they've secured those.
With how big of a new frontier NIL deals are, is there a number right now just flooding in for like how many athletes have secured one at the school? Is there athletes that have like multiple? Are there athletes like currently trying to get some?
A lot of student athletes have multiple. The ones that have one typically are itching to get another one. So we'll see them come in, get one, and they're like, hey, I want to work this business, and then they'll keep going. So majority of our student athletes have or want a deal, and we're just kind of going through the motions, having meetings with them, starting with their social media, starting with their business outreach.
So with NIL as well, does that factor into the recruiting process, especially regarding us not being necessarily like a Power 5 school and a Power 5 conference? Are these NIL deals in place before they come to school, or are they acquired when they get to school, or is it a mix of both?
So you can't get an NIL deal before you get here. So we can't start that process unless they're a student athlete here and enrolled in our university. However, we do have the ability to meet with recruits and let them know, hey, here's our NIL department. Dayton does student athlete branding. My overseas department, known as over student athlete excellence. We have a collective. We have tax meetings. We have guest speakers come in. So when we meet with recruits, it's more of a essentially like, hey, this is what we offer.
So how important is it to have these athletes go through you guys and go through the school? I mean, you brought up how NIL deals have been legal since 2021. And I remember when that news first broke, there was every athlete kind of all free for all with the Barstool athlete thing and the stuff like that. But how important is it to be able to have you guys to be kind of the bridge in between?
I would say it's very important. One thing that always sticks out to me, and I always tell this to our recruits and to our student athletes, is that when tax season comes around, you're going to have to report all these deals, right? So it's going to be important for you to make sure that you go into Influencer, and that's our marketplace platform, our NIL platform, and that you're reporting these deals, because when the IRS comes around, they're going to be expecting you to report all these deals and all these services that you've been given.
Right.
So it is important for it to be disclosed to Dayton and myself, and also in a sense of like, hey, you got to make sure you actually go through with these things that you're signing away to. And also there's guidelines, law guidelines and NCAA guidelines that our student athletes have to follow, right? There's certain things that they can promote, and there's certain things that they can't. If it's not in accordance with the NCAA, like if you're presenting a protein powder that's not NCAA regulated, you can't do that. So we have to catch that.
What is that dark side of it? What does the NCAA have the power to do if maybe this deal isn't correctly made, or maybe they are promoting something that is illegal?
The NCAA hasn't laid the hammer down too much yet, but I'm expecting that December, when tax season comes around, because of all these deals, and there'll be some things and some discipline handed out.
It almost seems like this brand new thing that we're all learning together, kind of as the athlete the viewer and you guys who are bridging the gap between the athletes and their own brand. Do you find yourselves learning new things every day where it's like, oh, I didn't even know this was possible until we found an idea like this?
Absolutely. There's always student athletes reaching out like, hey, I want to work for this company. And I'm like, wait, okay, we need to double back. We need to check with nutrition and make sure this is okay. We need to check with legal to make sure this is okay. Because we have seen so many things, whether that's a professor wanting to engage in the NIL space, there's rules and regulations on that. So we have to make sure that everyone's following guidelines and going about it the correct way. So every NIL deal honestly has its own unique twist on it, but thankfully there's a NIL delegates group. So we meet with NIL directors across the country, Power Five, any conference, honestly, that has someone delegated to NIL just to bounce ideas off of like, hey, what did you see this weekend? What did you see this weekend? How'd you handle this? How'd you handle that? So it's all like a big learning community. So we can, like I said, protect and position these student athletes the best we can in the space.
Dayton, you talked a little bit about how social media has such an impact. How do you forecast how these trends are going to affect students' popularity? Like you said, Instagram Reels and stuff like that.
I mean, I would say like a lot of our deals that we've had here at Illinois State have come through social media. And just encouraging our student athletes to capitalize on their name, image, and likeness now while like they have that status, like Maya mentioned. I've met with a couple athletes over the last 2 days or so that have really wanted to make a move in this space and start posting videos and showcasing, you know, that student athlete day in the life, which I'm really excited to see because honestly, like, I haven't seen a ton of athletes at the mid-major level really try to capitalize on that video presence or like that influencer lifestyle. I'm excited to see what our student athletes can do, but just encouraging them to put in the work and want to put that content out there.
What's the forecasting for the rules changing in the future?
Initially, universities in Illinois weren't allowed to help student athletes in the space, and then it was changed back at the end of June. So we've been seeing revisions to the law as, you know, things get brought to the attention of legislators and stuff like that.
What does the future of this hold? Obviously, the school has its own department in this now, and you assume it'll last hopefully multiple decades, but what's coming up?
What's coming up? I think a lot of the focus right now is on our international student athletes, right? Because our U.S. citizen, those resident student athletes have the opportunity and have a wide open range of what they can do. And our international student athletes are a little bit more confined of what they can do, not because of the NCAA, not because of the university, but because of their visa status. So that's a little bit higher up. So universities and organizations are trying to find ways for international student athletes to have a little bit more leeway and be able to take advantage of this. So that's kind of the main focus right now.
We're getting ready to sort of wrap everything up. We have to ask, do you guys have any NIL deals that like stick out to you as just like a really cool one, one that you just love the idea for?
I would say one of my favorite has been Kobe Rios' story where he donated all his money back to Western Avenue. It's really important in my eyes that NIL is seen more in the public eye for more than just money, but rather a professional development opportunity for our student athletes, right? Because Kobe had to go out and figure out how he was getting these t-shirts, how they were going to be printed, how they were going to be marketed, how you were going to deal with the funds when you got it in, how you were going to donate it back. So those are the stories that get me going because it's more than just generating money based off of your face and your name and your number and position on the field. But you're affecting the bigger community in that sense and developing yourself as an individual while doing it.
As well as the women's basketball team, they did a deal. I mean, obviously, it's the 50th year of Title IX, and they're doing a deal where proceeds go back to the Women's Sports Foundation on each of their candle sales. That's a team-wide thing, so that's really cool to see. That was one of my favorites, too. It's cool just to see how the student athletes want to give back and use that status that they have to make a difference in the community. Kobe was the very first student athlete I met with. And so when he came in and said, yeah, I don't want any of this money, I just want to give it back to move to normal as a kid that just transferred in here this year, it was a really good way to start the year.
Is there anything else you think that our listeners just need to know about the future of NIL?
Like I said, we're not a Power Five school, but we're meeting with all the Power Fives. So we're in the game trying to figure out what they're doing. They're taking ideas from us. So everyone's just collaborating to be the best. So follow our social media account. It's Visualize NIL. Just for information on what's going on, what our student athletes are doing.
Thank you to Dayton and Maya for doing the interview with us earlier. It was a very solid and fun interview, and we hope to have them on again sometime soon to talk about the future of NIL, which is something that will keep evolving as they keep moving on in that era. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about baseball with news and sports guest Tim Zalabak. We'll be right back here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
If I look to my left, I have the Fell Hall World Series trophy alongside us in the booth. And if you just read the plaque, which doesn't yet have an engraving for 2022, the last MVP, according to the trophy in 2021, is Tim Zalabak. And he might be, that by those means, the best resume of any guest you've ever had, because he is a Fell Hall World Series MVP. He's also our colleague here at ZND. Tim, how are you?
It's really good to be here, Mikey. So glad to hop on a Red Zone with you guys. And yeah, former MVP of the Fell Hall World Series. Feels good.
I mean, if it was my vote as a coach, I'd say give it back-to-back because you went crazy at pitching-wise. But I think it'll go to one of the more flashy bats, especially maybe Michael with the walk-off hit or something like that. But I don't know. They didn't really say who the MVP is this year yet. So
you sure it's not going to be me? I think I drew a walk.
You know what? I think we can give Tim the RVP, which is kind of like the MVP, like Mitch Trubisky
yeah, yeah,
won.
Yeah.
So we'll get the red zone valuable player of the game is Timmy Z.
So, Tim, we wanted to talk a little bit about you wanted to talk, and we all agreed with some craziness going on in the final month of baseball. I never thought I'd be this into a final month of baseball. The Cubs weren't in, but there's some crazy stuff going on, and there's two teams I don't like with the Yankees and Cardinals, but I can't help but respect Aaron Judge and Albert Pujols. What do you think? How is it watching these two in their home run chases?
I mean, they're both approaching. Well, Aaron Judge finally reached the milestone. Albert Pujols is getting really close to it, but it's really exciting to see people of our generation reach these milestones, 60 home runs. And when we think about players that have reached those heights, it's kind of that juiced era when guys were using steroids and stuff. And now it's cool to see a guy like Aaron Judge hit for his 60th home run. It's really historic, fun to watch.
Allegedly juiced.
Yeah, we'll never know. 6'7", you know, 250 pounds.
Update, Aaron Judge walked in the first inning just ended there. They're playing Boston at home, and Aaron Judge walked in his first at-bat of the day.
Could you imagine they just walk him the entire game?
That'd be the most Boston thing because they're rivals. They just keep walking him.
You are not getting the record on
that. I saw a tweet that there was a Cardinals fan that was like, if Albert Pujols hits 699 home runs in his career, he's finding every pitcher that walked him this year and egging their house. Which, yeah. To be fair, Albert Pujols also sat a lot of games. And we were talking about, Tim brought up a good point, like, do you think he would come back? And he's already announced that he's not going to come back. And it's one of those things where he is emptying the tank, and you can just tell it. But he's got 13 games left to do it. He didn't hit one today. I don't even know if he was in the lineup today.
I'm looking right now. I'll let you know as soon as I know. It doesn't look like it.
Yeah, which
no, he DH'd, and he batted four times. He did get a hit, but no home run.
He probably will play at least. He'll get an at bat in probably every game for the rest of the season. And the Cardinals do finish up the season with a 5-game stint against Pittsburgh in October. So Hunt for Red October is on.
You know, going back to Judge, you know, he's been attracting headlines primarily, you know, with his chase for the league single season home run record. But also, he wants to become the 11th player to win the Triple Crown, which we were talking about it before, I think early in August. That was potentially going to be Paul Goldschmidt's, you know, first baseman for the Cardinals. But, you know, it seems that Aaron Judge is kind of taking the front seat on that one. And you had something interesting to say about that when we were going to the commercial break. What was that, Dane?
I don't remember. I'll be honest. But the thing is, though, too, David, is it was the Mike Francesa he called a caller an idiot for saying that comparing Judge to the likes of Mantle and Maris. And because he was like, those guys are Triple Crown winners. One of them, I think, was it Maris? Mantle won the Triple Crown, but Maris is the home run leader.
They're all playing farmers.
Exactly. So,
but okay, I should clarify, those are great Hall of Fame baseball players, they were playing farmers.
And Francesco was like, Aaron Judge will never be a Triple Crown winner. And here we sit where he's leading the MLB in 10 categories. And you bring up Paul Goldschmidt, and there's very few games left, but if he gets on a heater, I would love to see two Triple Crown winners because it is by league. Oh, yeah. It's not by overall MLB. So it would be really cool to see one from each. But, Tim, you were telling me you had a little bit of a hot take for the MVP race.
I guess it is a hot take. Maybe I'm a sucker for a two-way player, but I love Shohei Ohtani, and I always will. A guy that'll see a 100-mile-per-hour sinker in the box, and then he'll throw that same pitch the next week after he learns it and, you know, hits, you know, 271, 260 career hitter, you know, playing really well this season, I'd like to see him win MVP.
Is it just because you both like pitching?
Wait. Tim, what position did you play when you played JUCO ball?
You know, I was a it's what's funny. My first year, I did two-way.
Okay, there it is.
That's right.
I don't like to be biased, but the challenging.
Tim's living out his dreams through Shohei Ohtani. No, Shohei is a fantastic ball player. He always has been. I've always been a little bit mad that he did think about the Cubs when he went picked the Angels. If I remember correctly, he was in the top three. So. I've always been a little bit salty about that, but I can't help but admit he's a fantastic ball player, even though that team, I mean, we talked about it last week, that team has no reason to be as bad as they have been the last 7 years in a row.
And I'm a sucker for the definition of the MVP award, which is most valuable player. And there is an argument that and you can tell by wins above replacement war that Ohtani is insanely valuable. But you take Judge off of the Yankees, and I think the Jays probably take that division, honestly, because their bats have been really inconsistent. And Judge is having a historic season. The only argument I think you need for Aaron Judge winning MVP is you look at the next highest home run total.
Kyle Schwarber.
In the MLB. What does he got, 38 home runs?
36 even, I think.
30s. And Judge has 60 is kind of a historic modern dead ball season. It's nuts. It's a historic season. Aaron Judge is your MVP. It should be, and I'm gonna fight Tim on this one. It should be unanimously Aaron Judge.
I don't think it will be, though, because you got to always look at a two-way ball player in his prime. And always,
if Mike Francesa has a vote, it'll probably be something absurd. He'll probably vote for an NL player because Aaron Judge will never win a Triple Crown or be in the running.
I'm sorry. I just got to plug this. We're talking about Aaron Jones. We're talking about the Yankees, the Cardinals. But, you know, my Chicago White Sox are mathematically still in this thing.
The last two nights in a row. They are.
You never
Sox
know.
And five. Yeah. Sox and five.
It's always going to be hope in my corner. Just throwing that out there.
So the problem is the AL East. So right now, Houston's for sure in. I think New York might be two. I don't know. And then if not, they're probably only a win or two away. And then Cleveland's still holding out in that AL Central. But from there, there's three wildcard teams now, which still throws me for a loop. But there's three wildcard teams now, and we got Toronto, Seattle, and Tampa Bay in that order right now. Closely followed by Baltimore and Chicago.
And J-Rod just got hurt today. He left the game with elbow soreness.
Which is not good.
No, not for a team that is really – like they're a good power-hitting team, but they don't really have a consistent bat, and J-Rod's batting above .275 right now, so to lose that would be huge.
Who would have thought that Cleveland under – the first year under the name Guardians, I just think it's funny to call them Cleveland Guardians, but who would have thought that they would – be the outright winner of the AL Central? I thought it would have been, if not the White Sox, I thought at very least would have been the Twins.
I mean, literally, it's just a poor division. But I will say
it's competitive. I mean, you have the Twins and White Sox and Guardians all at the top.
Right. It's one of those things where someone's got to win. Like, obviously, there's a division winner. But Tristan McKenzie at the top of the rotation for the Guardians, paired with Shane Bieber, is electric. Like, the youth movement in baseball, you're just seeing – like these kids that their stuff is so good. Mm-hmm. Like I was talking about Spencer Strider. You've got Tristan McKenzie, Hunter Green, and some of them are still getting lit up, but they're getting 9 strikeouts a game. So it's really a weird era of baseball right now because the balls, it really varies by season. Like it's like next year there's going to be 3 or 4 50 home run guys. Like look at the season that Vladdy had last year compared to the season he's having this year. And Vladdy, in respect to like where he ranks in the numbers, he's still like probably a top 15, top 20 guy. Where last year, his numbers last year would have put him top 3. It weirds me out to see these guys like, and I think it makes a guy like Nolan Arenado too. I got Cardinals bias, but with the power numbers down and he's still hitting pretty close to his career averages, like I'm like he deserves to be in the MVP conversation, the NL too.
And you brought up kind of that dead ball year, which is really interesting. I read a couple of things where, and this is all kind of speculation, but for different primetime games and different matchups, they're using juiced balls. Like,
heard the
and
same
you,
thing.
You see a guy like Aaron Judge hit 60 home runs, and I didn't even know this, but Kyle Schwarber with the 38 home runs, that's such a large difference. And you got to imagine, I mean, you have to start thinking about maybe they're giving the like juiced balls to the Yankees games, or you never know.
I keep seeing memes about somebody said like an MLB official walking into the series in St. Louis or into the series in New York. Because, I mean, that'd be great for baseball if both of them accomplished that. I mean, you know how many eyes who don't normally watch the Yankees tune into the YES Network last night to watch his first at-bat? ESPN sent a little notification about it. So I clicked on it and watched ESPN. And the announcer literally said something like, if you're not usually with us, I'm whoever, and welcome into the Yankees network. He knew full well. So just for the Yankees' sake, for money's sake, for the
baseball's sake.
Yeah, for baseball's sake. Yeah, we talked about it last week. The last time baseball had something this exciting home run-wise was in 1998 with McGuire and Sosa, and that brought back the sport. So to see something like this again, it's not really a home run chase as much as it is two individuals and two different accomplishments, but it's really cool to see.
So as our resident Tom Brady fan, what are your thoughts on the MLB balls and possibly them being messed with for primetime games?
You would know a lot about that.
Well, you know, that's maybe ask Bill Belichick.
Yeah, okay. we'll make sure to get him on the horn.
I was going
to
say one thing about this base, the AL first, though. I think one thing we're forgetting, we talk about them sometimes, one thing we're forgetting with all this Yankees hype and talking about how thick the AL East and AL Central is, how easily Houston has gotten up to 100 wins. Houston is another team to deal with this year. They have been for 5-6 years, cheating or not. I mean, they are going to be another team that is probably still the favorite to win the AL and represent them in the World Series, I think.
I think everyone just has so much cognitive dissonance with the Astros. They just like kind of like put them in the corner of their mind where all the other bad stuff resides.
Oh, yeah.
But I it's hard for me to see anyone beating the Dodgers, because who have also easily gotten to 100 wins. And I just would like to see if that Mets rotation, because obviously it's baseball is it's the same sport, but you get to see the better players more in the playoffs because you limit your rotation. I don't want to see Scherzer, DeGrom, and insert name here in the playoffs, because that's just not fair. That's just not fun.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a fun playoff race. I think the NL playoffs are going to be a lot more fun to watch than the AL, because I think in the AL, you've basically – it's
all kind of just fluff until it gets down to the Yankees and Astros and whoever's lucky enough to have to lose to one of them.
And hopefully, like, we can see Toronto catch fire, because we need to know how this affects the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Oh, God. I knew it was coming. Tim, you decided on the baseball segments. Are there any last things you want to say about the baseball in the final month here?
I just would love to see Pujols get to 700. I think that would be awesome.
What do you think is more likely to happen?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I was having a conversation about a month ago with a buddy that Judge would not get to 60, and they were projecting him to get to 70. So, like, look for Aaron Judge to get 65 this year, and I do think Pujols will get to 700.
If Judge gets one of them tonight or tomorrow, or he can't. Yeah, he can tonight. Yeah. Sorry, I forgot that the Cardinals already played. So if he gets the 61 tonight or tomorrow, he'll cool off for the weekend, but then next week he'll just get hot again in time, and he'll get up to 65, 67.
If you're a pitcher and it's like game like 150-something, and you're pitching to Albert Pujols, are you just throwing cookies right down the – like, I would love to be synonymous.
I doubt it.
With
I doubt – you're more infamous if you're the guy who struck out Pujols to end his regular season career.
Well, how about Christian Yelich taking that absolute cookie from Wainwright and Molina out of respect for them being the longest tenured battery in the MLB? It's one of those things where the MLB is like an old – it's a respect thing where it's like, we'll give Albert Pujols a
so much different for hitting, though, you know. I mean, he's serving up a guy a fastball. This is not going to guarantee
no.
a home run.
Yeah.
It's just different that way.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, it's our segment Pick 6. It's something we do every week. We talk about six NFL games and who's going to win. We'll be right back here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to The Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WZMD.
And we're back for the fourth and final segment of today's edition of The Red Zone, but it's the most exciting during football season. It's Pick 6, and it is myself, David Moses, Dane Dreyfus, and Tim Zalbeck. I'm Mikey Frinelli, and we have six NFL games that we want to talk about today, starting with the Packers and the Bucks, the battle of each bay, Green Bay and Tampa Bay, and the battle of Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, two of the people who are debated to be the GOAT, and the battle of two of the GOATs in this booth, myself and Dane Dreyfus. Couldn't even go through that without laughing and looking at Dane. Dane, a huge, undisputed Packers in general fan and Aaron Rodgers fan, and myself, just a fan of Tom Brady, have been for at least the last couple of years, and just respecting his greatness. Who do you guys have in this one? David, I'll let you go first.
I'm going to keep it short and simple this week. I'm going to go with the Buccaneers. You know, Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers and this Packers team, they still haven't done enough, you know, for me, persuading me that they're going to be a deep playoff team. I'm sorry, Dane. And honestly, the Bucs haven't either, but, you know, at least on the offensive side of the ball. But I think they'll do enough this week to get the win against the Packers.
The apology better be as loud as the disrespect.
Tim, you go ahead and go before Dane and
I'm going to have to agree with David here. I'm going with Bucks. Just like he said, they're Rodgers, not too keen with his offense right now, and I think the they can't rely on that run game for too much longer.
Dane?
The real winners of this game is whoever bets the under, because the Buccaneers are going in without Julio Jones, Chris Godwin, and Mike Evans, so their top three receivers. I'm taking the Packers, and it, like, this isn't – yeah, David's going like, oh, wait a second.
I didn't know all that.
The Packers have a good run game. That they've got two options, and it's two great defenses. So it's going to be a low-scoring affair. Give me the Packers, though, and this is a genuine pick. This isn't a homer pick. Like, I like the Packers in this one.
I agree with you on the under thing, because, yes, Tampa's missing a lot of their weapons, and in general, Tampa just found ways to win with low-scoring contests so far. But there's another reason why I think the under's going to hit. There's two things, actually. NBAB, never bet against Brady. NBAB, never bet against Brady. I've always said it, and the first 2 weeks it worked out. And second, yes, that Packers run game is done really well so far. I mean, I should know as a Bears fan, but I think the Bucs defense is going to stand a better chance at somehow finding a way to stop them.
Their run defense is nuts. But Vita Vea is that guy.
Yeah, I mean, Rodgers leaned on the run offense last week against the Bears, and why shouldn't he? I mean, it was where they could find a way to win. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I think the Bucs are going to definitely find a way to stop that, at least more than the Bears defensively.
Only reason he couldn't pass the ball is because Eddie Jackson was in the secondary. Let's just say that, Dave.
Tell us how you really feel.
I guess we'll have more ground to argue about Brady and Rodgers after we see them face off. I'm glad they're both healthy and willing to face off, but I guess we'll move on there to Sunday Night Football between the 49ers and Broncos Country Let's Ride with Russell Wilson. And it's going to be Jimmy G now without Trey Lance. What do you guys think of this one?
I'm going with the Niners. You know, Jimmy G is back in the driver's seat at QB1. He has more wiggle room and control of the offense, I think, compared to Trey Lance. And that's just an experience thing. I don't think it's a knock to Trey Lance's performances, you know, before he got injured. I just think Jimmy G, he's played with this team as the QB1 for about 2 years now, took him to a championship game, and I think he's going to do very good this week.
Yeah, once again, I'm agreeing with David here. I'm going to go Niners. I'm expecting a big game from Deebo Samuel and Jimmy G back in the driver's seat, NFC champ. So it's going to be a good game there.
It looks like we're riding with the Niners, because I have to say, the AFC West might be the most talented division ever. It also might be the worst coach division ever. Mm-hmm. Between Nathaniel Hackett, Brandon Staley, and Josh McDaniels, as a avid football fan, they make me want to pull my hair out watching all that talent just get wasted by poor play calling and poor clock management. So I'm going with the Niners here. And you're going to see a theme with my picks. It's going to come down to coaching in most of these picks.
And I think Hackett, if he's not too much of a bonehead, he can still find a way to beat the Niners on defense, especially. I think I can still. I'm going to go with the Broncos only because I want to trust Russ still, despite him losing some skill. I think it was part of the hand injury last year, as you've seen early this season, just not the same. But I still think I'm going to trust him at home against a 49ers team whose defense is just, I don't know if they're good enough to stop one of the best quarterbacks of the decade. And I know it's kind of an upset pick, but I'm confident with it. Steve also agrees with me on the Broncos, and I forgot to mention Steve Cease also went with the Bucks. So he was with us on the Bucks, and it looks like we are on a lonely island together though for the Broncos.
I do look like Andy Samberg. I will say it again, the lonely island.
that's like my little phrase these days for if somebody's alone on a pick. Taking a look over in Chicago, back to Chicago. And they will be hosting the Houston Texans, who are a weird team this year. No wins, one loss, one tie against the Colts. Some people thought the Colts would be really good in the AFC, but they're now also 0-1-1. But we're talking about the Texans and the Bears. David, what do you think?
Bear down. That's it.
Yep, I'm going to agree with that one.
Short and sweet. Yeah, we're bearing down. Defense, we're at home. Justin Fields, better week. Here we go.
Actually, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'll let you go ahead and make your pick, but that's not it for me.
Yeah. Okay. David's got to hop on the soapbox here in a second, but
I'll let him do it.
I'm trying to stall and come up with a clever thing to pick the Texans, because I'm going Texans here.
Oh,
I think
God.
They've been easily one of the most disrespected teams early on. They've been competitive in all their games. The difference here is going to be the run game for the Bears. If the Bears can run the ball effectively, they'll win the game, but they can't get out of their own way. Until I see something where they play in a normal weather game that isn't a monsoon, I'm not gonna buy in on the Bears, and I'm gonna buy in on the Texans, because they were projected to be blown out in two. You know what? Before I finish that statement, good teams win, great teams cover. The Texans have covered in both games. Give me the Texans.
We're picking against, or just for money line though. I'm still gonna go with the Bears. I think they find a way to win this one. Steve also said bear down. David, you want to elaborate on the bearing down?
Yeah, I just got a 15-second spill. I am so disappointed with this Bears offense. Our leading receiver is Equanimeous St. Brown. I think Darnell Mooney has 2 catches for -4 yards. Cole Kmet, who was supposed to have a monster year, has no receptions. And I have him in fantasy, by the way. I got 0 points 2 weeks in a row.
Darnell Mooney. Yeah.
It's just been so underwhelming. I love to see us, you know, versus a least talented Houston Texans team, kind of, you know, open this thing up and do something on the offensive side of the ball. But next game.
The Bald Bowl. The Lions and the Vikings. Going back to a couple weeks ago, I made the bet that if for some reason Detroit finds a way to win more games in Minnesota, I would shave my head. And we do it here in the studio. You'd be able to hear the vzzz as I shave my head. So both teams have a win now, and I'm going to go with, in this one, the Vikings. Obviously, Dane called me out on it last week, and he was right. You don't bet on Kirk Cousins in the primetime lights.
You were very right.
It did not go well for him against Eagles defense.
He threw 3 picks, right?
Yeah. And Darius Slay had 2 of them, I think, right?
Yep.
And so, I mean, the Vikings, I hope, can find a way against a very, very tough Lions team. They are competitive, and that's Dan Campbell. He really makes sure they stay in games. I've never been one to believe the Lions hype. I think on paper the Vikings are so much better, and there's no reason why the Vikings shouldn't win this one with all the offensive weapons they have. But we'll see.
I'm going to have to agree with you. I'll take the Vikings. I don't want that to, you know, take away from how good I think the Lions have done this year so far. At being 1-1 on the year, they have really played with a lot of intensity. And I think that it is the head coaches, all of the coaches. Dan Campbell came in last year and kind of changed the feel of that locker room. And it's really starting to show on the field. So I'm going to go with the Vikings, though. But I do like what the Lions have been doing this year.
Tim?
I'm going to go with the Vikings, too. I do agree. It's going to be a really close game. I think it's going to be a really good matchup. And Justin Jefferson, I think we're going to see a good game from that guy.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna go Vikings here too. And once again, the winner for this game is whoever bets the over, because I think both these offenses are really good. And you're watching two of the best young receivers in the game, and Amon-Ra St. Brown, Justin Jefferson go head to head. But it just smells like one of those games too, where you're gonna then see a lot of probably like, I don't know, like someone like Quintez Cephas and then Adam Thielen are gonna go off just because the NFL zigs when everyone else zags.
Yeah,
so.
Good point. Steve, being the resident Lions fan, are we surprised? Went with Detroit. Taking a look at Monday Night Football, it's going to be the Giants and the Cowboys. Two teams that have been, I mean, I'd say the Giants were surprising at 2-0. And I would say that the Cowboys are, I don't know what the word is, but they bounced back with a win last week. And they're now 1-1. So in this one, I'll start off. I'm going to go with the Giants. I'm going to keep picking them while they're hot. I don't think Dallas is that tough an opponent. You saw them week one against the Bucs, couldn't really do anything. And then you got a nice win last week with Cooper Rush. But either way, I think the Giants are going to stay hot, and then just enough Giants fans are going to be happy about 3-0, so when they finally play a good team, they're going to lose bad, and it's going to all come back to
earth. I don't know if they would have called that a good win. Like, that, it was just, as far as wins go, that was a win.
Yeah, a win's a win, but I'm saying, like, eventually they're going to lose to a good team, and then it'll all come crashing down.
Right.
Kind of like when the Bears started, like, 4-5-0 a couple years ago, and just all came crashing
Lost
down.
Lost, like, 5 straight up.
Yeah, exactly. Tim, what do you think?
I got Giants winning. They're at home. Dak's hurt, and I'm expecting to see a good game out of Saquon.
David?
So I don't know if you guys heard. It was a story that came out, I think today, actually. Jerry Jones was interviewed, and he was actually, I think, siding with Cooper Rush.
He said something like,
he embraces a quarterback controversy right now.
Oh, my goodness.
Somebody brought something up about if you would embrace the quarterback controversy, which I feel like is such the wrong thing to say.
That is not good.
To someone they've declared and both financially supported as your franchise quarterback, to say that to Dak Prescott. If I'm Dak Prescott and I hear that even if a reporter kind of like begged him to say it, I hope Jerry went and talked to Dak immediately and said, I didn't mean it like that.
Yeah, so I think that kind of jinxed the Cooper Rush hype, because I was kind of on it. I saw his performance last week, and I was very impressed with, you know, how good he was being able to move the ball. But I think that Jerry Jones kind of jinxed him there, so I'm going to go with the Giants on this one.
If Jerry Jones still had control of this team, he would sign Johnny Manziel to play for him right this instant.
Oh, no doubt. Or bring back Cam Newton somehow.
Literally. So, but I'm going to go Giants here. I think Tim said it perfectly. One thing to add on to it would be just, are you going with Brian Daboll or Mike McCarthy? I don't think that's much of a competition. I'm going Brian Daboll.
And Steve went with the Cowboys, leaving him for the second round in a row here on a lonely island, picking the only team we didn't. And that cues us into tonight's matchup, starting off just after this is over. It's going to be Thursday Night Football between divisional rivals, the Steelers and the Browns. I went with Pittsburgh. I've kind of liked what I've seen a lot so far from their offense. It's been somewhat surprising, I guess, under Mitch Trubisky, and their defense is as good as they were on paper. So I think they're going to get a pretty easy win tonight against Cleveland.
I like the Browns. I think when you talk about the quarterback matchup and Jacoby Brissett and Mitchell Trubisky, I just see a very big.
It's a mid-off.
It's a mid-off, but it's a discrepancy because I think if you're talking experience-wise, I'm taking Jacoby Brissett. Mm-hmm. He had his time in Indianapolis, and he went to a few other teams, and I like him. From a person who watched every single Bears game probably since that 2018 season, I'm not putting my trust in Mitch Trubisky ever again, so I'm just going to go with the Browns.
Fair enough. You did see, sorry to cut you guys off if you guys were going to take your turn, but I got to say, I can see the Steelers doing well this year if their defense continues to keep it up and T.J. Watt isn't gone for too long, because the only time that Mitch was franchise good for the Bears was when he had a great defense behind him, when he's off the field half the game, truly more than half the game. And when Mitch has a good enough defense to keep him confident, Trubisky can be pretty solid. So that's what I see in the Steelers right now.
Okay, then Trubisky or Tom Brady? Which is it? Which is it, Mikey?
Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr. What are you asking me?
We had to get the full name in there somehow.
Tim, what do you think?
I like the Steelers. I think their defense is just going to outplay the Browns this week. And I like Trubisky, you know. I forgive him.
Trubisky.
The Bears still never posted a thank you video for Mitch Trubisky, but they thanked.
That's kind of whack,
They thanked every single other player who they ever traded or let go of this past offseason, and the Blackhawks thanked or traded every single.
We're not getting into that yet.
But
you're going to trigger me.
The Bears still never thanked Mitch Trubisky. Steve picked the Steelers. That leaves us with Dane Dreyfus. What do you think?
Riding home with the Browns because I'll
to be different.
No, because the Steelers don't have a good run defense. The Browns are just a running team, and Nick Chubb is the best running back in the NFL. That's my hot take for the night.
The only games that Dane and I agreed on were the Vikings and the Giants, so at least we have that going for us. Guys, this is another great show here. I appreciate being here with you guys, as always. That's going to be it for us. For David Moses, Dane Dreyfus, Tim Zalbeck, and myself, Mikey Frinelli, thank you and have a good night.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 1033 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.